KaiserNetwork.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the White House Summit on Malaria. Now, please welcome, from Durban, South Africa, the Children of Agape. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our Master of Ceremonies, civic leader, founder of the Gondobe Manga Foundation, and star of ABC's Grey's Anatomy, Isaiah Washington.
Greetings and good morning, and in my newfound language, Bua, out of Sierra Leone. What a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful song. I've been to Africa, and I've met many, many joyful children like these. We are here today bound by our common hope to see African children grow up. Defeating malaria is an urgent calling and an achievable goal. Malaria, a completely preventable and treatable disease, kills a child in Africa every 30 seconds. At least 1 million infants and children under 5 sub-Saharan Africa die each year. We have eliminated malaria before, and with the help of people across the United States and around the world, we can do it again.
It's hard to believe now, but just a few generations ago, malaria plagued the southeastern United States. But after a sustained public effort, the United States was declared malaria-free. In Panama, these same techniques were used last century during construction of the Panama Canal, and infection rates for workers dropped 80% in 2 years. Malaria has an enormous economic impact. Malaria makes workers weak and fills hospitals. When individuals cannot work, economies suffer, and impoverished nations are subject to conflict. The President and Mrs. Bush summit will examine the challenge of malaria facing Africa today, how public-private partnerships and multilateral efforts are addressing this challenge, and how we can mobilize grassroots efforts to that individuals can be a part of saving the life of another in Africa. We know we can save millions of lives. We have already begun. I would now like to introduce a woman who has said herself that our first challenge is to inspire the people of all free nations so that we may unite in a common cause to solve common problems. With honor, I introduce to you Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice.
Good morning, and thank you to Isaiah Washington, both for that kind introduction and for the dedication and commitment that you have shown to this and so many causes. I'm honored to join all of you here today at the White House Summit on Malaria. I'm also pleased by the tremendous support that this summit has received from America's business community, religious leaders, and other concerned citizens. The idea of public-private partnerships is at the heart of so much of President Bush's vision for America. And I want to welcome all of you and to thank you for joining us today. What brings us together today is our basic belief that all human beings are free by nature and equal in dignity, that every life is precious. And as President Bush has said, that no insignificant person was ever born. We are led, therefore, to this fundamental conviction that the child suffering from malaria in Africa possesses the same matchless value as the most powerful and prosperous among us. This is a profound and revolutionary idea, a vision of dignity that has transformed our nation and is transforming our world. It is the idea that is also at the heart of America's public diplomacy, the work we are doing to help save and transform lives across the world. President Bush has put compassion at the top of our agenda. The American people's concern for equality and dignity at the center of our nation's foreign policy. It is these principles that lead us into the world to support the liberty and human rights of all people, to confront heinous crimes like trafficking in persons, and to fight dreadful diseases that steal human life indiscriminately and tragically, HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, and of course, malaria. Last year, the President resolved that America can and must play a greater role in the global fight against this curable disease. So he launched the President's Malaria Initiative, a historic commitment to work with developing nations in Africa and around the world to fight to end malaria, just as we did in this country two generations ago. The President also made it clear that our effort could only succeed if we reached beyond government and mobilized the good faith and the hard work of private partners. Judging by this great audience and this great response, I would say that we're already succeeding together. One person who has taken tremendous leadership in our fight against malaria is the woman I have the honor of introducing to you today, the First Lady of the United States, Laura Bush. In my 4 years at the White House, and now in my past 2 years as Secretary of State, I've had the honor of working closely with the First Lady on some of the most important issues facing the international community, from the promotion of education and literacy in every country in the world, to the empowerment of women in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, to the fight against extreme poverty in Africa. In the past year, it has been my privilege to work with the First Lady, shoulder to shoulder, to help advance her vision and the President's vision of a world in which no human life is lost to a disease that we can prevent with something as simple as a well-covered place to sleep. I have seen the passion and the conviction with which the First Lady has tackled this fight against malaria. She has worked tirelessly to mobilize the resources and the goodwill of the American people, and she has done a great deal to make this summit today a reality. Along with countless others, I have experienced the First Lady's decency, her generosity, and her commitment to human dignity. And in that time, I've gained an even greater joy, the honor of calling her my friend. So today, it is my privilege to introduce to you a great woman, a compassionate woman, First Lady Laura Bush.
Thank you all very much. Thank you so much, Dr. Rice. Thank you all. Thanks so much. Thank you very, very much. Thank you so much, Dr. Rice. Thank you for your great work as Secretary of State. I want to recognize a few people in the audience. Mrs. Chantal de Sousa Yayi is here. She's the wife of the President of Benin. She's joining us today. Ambassador Randall Tobias, who's the Director of Foreign Assistance and Administrator for USAID, who's been very active in both this and earlier in his government career as the AIDS Administrator with HIV/AIDS. Admiral Timothy Zeamer. Admiral Zeamer is the one who's the U.S. Global Malaria Coordinator. He's been absolutely instrumental in the development of this summit and in all the work President's Malaria Initiative has done so far. Thank you, Admiral Zeamer. Ray Chambers, who's the chairman of Malaria No More. Ray is an example to all of us of someone who, because of a fortune in his life, a fortunate life, he has reached out around the world to help other people. And thank you so much, Ray, for being so involved in this. The members of Congress that are here, thank you all for coming. The members of the Diplomatic Corps. I want to thank our host at National Geographic, John Fahey and Gilbert Grosvenor. Thank you all very, very much for letting us meet here today. Educators, business leaders, philanthropists, researchers, activists, and distinguished guests, welcome to the White House Summit on Malaria. Today's gathering presents us with a historic opportunity to end the suffering of millions. Governments, the private sector, and concerned citizens have all united in one place, ready with unprecedented commitments that can turn the tide against malaria. We're here because eradicating malaria is an urgent calling. The disease claims 1.2 million lives every year. It devastates people living with HIV/AIDS, pregnant women, and especially young children and babies. Malaria kills 3,000 children in Africa every day. Parents grieve for their sons and daughters. Communities mourn. And developing countries lose generations of productive citizens. Adding to the urgency is the fact that malaria is treatable and preventable. The disease once sickened men, women, and children in many parts of the United States. But through advances in science and technology, we learn that the cause of such enormous suffering is a microscopic parasite carried by an insect. We learned how to stop the spread of malaria, and the disease was eliminated in the United States nearly 60 years ago. The challenge now is to use this scientific progress so that it benefits people still at risk. In June 2005, President Bush launched the President's Malaria Initiative, a five-year, $1.2 billion program to combat malaria in 15 of the hardest-hit African nations. This initiative calls on developed countries, private foundations, and volunteer organizations to join to reduce the suffering and death caused by malaria. Private foundations and corporations have responded with millions of dollars for prevention and treatment. Civic groups and religious organizations have mobilized thousands of volunteers. Through early PMI partnerships with the first three focus countries, aid from the American people has reached about 6 million Africans. Next year, 30 million more will receive life-saving medicines, sprays, and nets as the program expands. These partnerships save lives and spread hope. Last year, in the Tanzanian villages of Kambini and Kawani, during the peak infection month of June, local health workers documented more than 450 cases of malaria. This June, 1 year into PMI, the number of cases plummeted to 8. In some PMI areas, malaria researchers have actually complained that they no longer have enough cases to sustain their studies. They're the only ones complaining. For the Malaria Initiative to save even more lives, its resources must be used effectively and strategically. Today, I'm delighted to announce that PMI will launch the Malaria Communities Program, a $30 million initiative to advance grassroots malaria control projects in Africa. The Malaria Communities Program will provide grants to African and American NGOs, as well as civic and religious groups, to support their malaria control work. It will encourage more charitable organizations to join the fight. The Communities Program complements the efforts of African governments by creating independent, sustainable malaria control programs in villages throughout Africa. These initiatives can protect children and their families long after PMI sunsets. Most important, the Malaria Communities Program will help citizens take charge of their own health. Defeating this disease requires the cooperation of citizens in Africa. It also requires the support of citizens here in the United States. Each and every one of us has the responsibility to stop the suffering caused by malaria, because every life in every land matters, and all of us can do something to help. Because one of the best protections against malaria is simple and inexpensive, a long-lasting insecticide-treated bed net. Only a fraction of African homes have the bed nets they need, but any individual who can raise $10 can buy a net and save a life. Individuals throughout our country are saving lives across Africa. Thanks to Malaria No More, an enormous grassroots network that will work to provide bed nets for millions of Africans. Communities hold bake sales, raffles, silent auctions, and readathons. Students sell T-shirts and run lemonade stands, and even dress up as mosquitoes to show off their efforts. Concerned citizens can harness the potential of the Internet to launch creative fundraising campaigns. One group, Madness Against Malaria, established an online March Madness fundraising tournament. 64 teams from around the world compete to see who can accumulate the most online donations. The team that buys the most bed nets wins the Malaria Cup trophy and saves thousands of lives. Defeating malaria also requires education. Life-saving nets, sprays, and medicines work best when people know how to use them. And throughout Africa, people must know how malaria is transmitted. So private citizens in Africa and the United States are building partnerships to improve education in malaria-prone areas. In Rwanda, Episcopal Bishop John Ruchahana knows that malaria control and education are inseparable. His diocese provides villagers with malaria treatment and also teaches the proper use of sprays and nets. At the 62 schools the bishop oversees, children learn early on that malaria prevention must be a way of life. The bishop's efforts are supported by churches from across the United States, from Chicago to Little Rock, from the East Coast to the West. caring individuals sponsor students and supply bed nets and medicines. Hundreds of Americans have visited Rwanda as volunteers, educating communities about malaria treatment. A vital part of this education, Bishop Ruchahanda says, is teaching villagers how to read. Illiteracy goes with poverty, the bishop explains, and both perpetuate the disease. So at every one of the diocese's 360 churches, volunteers offer literacy instruction. Through their women's ministries, the churches make a special effort to reach mothers. They recognize that literate women can make wise decisions that will protect them and their children from malaria. Education in the developed world is equally as important. Across America, the private sector is working to raise the public's awareness of malaria. Later this morning, you'll hear about one example, Nets Are Nice, a picture book that teaches children what they can do to help end this disease. Nets Are Nice was developed by Malaria No More. With corporate and foundation support, the book will be distributed to nearly 6 million students throughout the United States this spring. Nets Are Nice is a terrific educational resource, and it's a great example of how the government, businesses, and private philanthropists can work together to educate children in the United States about malaria. Individual citizens, too, are doing their part. At Lake Oswego High School in Oregon, a 16-year-old student, Emily Fuller, launched a project to raise money for bed nets and to raise awareness in her community. She and her classmates set up tables outside the school cafeteria and draped them with nets, attracting curious students. Plans are underway to hold educational forums in the school auditorium and to hold fundraising shootout contests during halftime at the school's basketball games. The principal at Lake Oswego High, Bruce Plato, says teachers are planning to work malaria education into their political science and world history classes. There's a lot of interest in this, the principal says. Malaria is something that's happening half a world away, but this is something we can do to help. Every one of us can do something to help prevent the suffering caused by malaria. And the more people know about the disease, the more quickly we can defeat it. Today, I'm delighted to announce that President Bush will designate April 25, 2007, as Malaria Awareness Day. African countries and other nations commemorate April 25th to raise global awareness of malaria and to reaffirm their commitment to ending this disease. The United States is proud to stand with them. Ending the malaria epidemic is an ambitious goal, but one we can and must achieve. By defeating malaria, the American people can help people in Africa enjoy greater prosperity and good health. Mothers here can help mothers in Africa watch their children grow healthy and strong. Children here can help children in Africa delight in the same pleasures they enjoy, going to school, playing games, and making and keeping friends. One of these hopeful children is Kanuri Kamidi, a teenager in Kenya, where malaria kills more than 30,000 children every year. For an essay contest at his school, Kanuri wrote, "If we want to develop a country such as Kenya, we must all come together to help one another so we may be able to make our world a malaria-free world." During this holiday season, we urge the citizens of many nations to come together to give the greatest gift to those in need, life. May God bless each of you and your work to make our world a malaria-free world. Thank you all very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome UNICEF's Goodwill Ambassador for Malaria, Yvonne Chaka Chaka.
Good morning, Mrs. Bush. distinguished guests, and everyone here. I want to thank you very deeply, Mrs. Bush, for your kind words. It's a great honor for me to be here today, all the way from my homeland, South Africa. This isn't the first trip that I've made to come here and speak about malaria, and it won't be the last one. I've traveled to many countries to speak to all sorts of people about the need to be done to win this epidemic, the struggle against malaria. Malaria has affected Africa, my homeland, in a devastating way. Malaria kills more than 1 million people a year, mostly children in Africa. Whether we suffer from malaria or have lost a loved one from this disease, all of us have been touched by malaria, and we are united in a common goal to defeat it. Malaria has touched me in a very closely, and one of my special friends died, unfortunately. In 2004, I traveled to Gabon, and one of my band members died of malaria. Phumzile Ntuli was a great musician, a young mother. She did not deserve to die. She was a strong young woman, but she fell into a coma and died from this terrible disease. We can even imagine how desperately ill children feel when they get malaria. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Phumzile's death and all the needless deaths of suffering of so many children won't let me rest until this disease is defeated. That's why I've established my own foundation called the Princess of Africa Foundation to make sure that we need to make sure that there is transparency. We need accountability from our African leaders and to make sure that the donors' money is used appropriately. We must free Africa from this grip of this disease. We are going to be watching a film, ladies and gentlemen. The film we're just about to see is not a scientific treatise on malaria. Rather, it is an effort to educate and engage ordinary citizens about the toll of this disease and to show people that we can all make a difference in helping Africa fight against malaria and ultimately give a child the gift of growing up. So let us watch and learn from this film, and then let us all act and end the suffering and the death that malaria inflicts. Mrs. Bush, it is true that behind a great leader, there is a caring woman like yourself and all other women out there like Melinda Gates, Grace Michelle, and everyone here. Women are an ocean, nurturing and strong. Let's do it for the sake of our children. Thank you very much.
In many areas in sub-Saharan Africa, the plague of malaria has decimated villages, ravaging the people and whole economies, threatening the future of the continent. This village is not one of them. This village is virtually malaria-free. In this village, illness due to malaria has been drastically reduced. Death rates have plummeted, and productivity and quality of life has soared. Even more remarkable, it has not cost billions. A small investment per person has profoundly improved quality of life for all of the inhabitants here. For about $10, we can help give African children the gift of growing up. This village is only the most recent of areas where malaria has been beaten back and health has been reestablished through the use of well-known methods. We have conquered it before, and we can do it again. It's hard to believe now, but just a few generations ago, malaria plagued the southeastern United States. But after a sustained public effort, the United States was declared malaria-free. In Panama, these same techniques were used last century during construction of the Panama Canal, and infection rates for workers dropped 80% in just 2 years. But But today, the reality in sub-Saharan Africa is staggering. Each year, up to 500 million people worldwide fall ill with malaria, and over 1 million of them die, mostly children under 5. Pregnant women are especially susceptible to malaria-induced anemia, which puts their babies at risk. The human impact is all too visible. And without our efforts, many more children will die. Malaria causes enormous economic impact as well. Malaria makes workers weak and fills hospitals. It is estimated that malaria will reduce Africa's economic growth by 20% if nothing is done. Impoverished nations and discontented peoples are also more likely to fall prey to conflict. Fortunately, as we learned in the last century, there is a comprehensive approach to controlling malaria. And today, we have even more elimination techniques we know work. Long-lasting insecticide-treated mosquito bed nets are the first line of defense. These nets create a protective barrier against mosquitoes at night when the vast majority of transmissions occur. Two people, or a mom and her children, can sleep under a bed net for up to 5 years, safe from malaria. Indoor spraying and efforts to disrupt mosquito breeding grounds are two more effective methods to control infection. There are medicines to help pregnant moms have better resistance to malaria. And when people are infected by malaria, there are medicines that will help make them better quickly, such as novel artemisinin-based therapies. It will also take more work to build up the healthcare systems and volunteer networks so there are enough doctors and workers to deliver the solutions everywhere. To do this takes resources.
The toll of malaria is even more tragic because the disease itself is highly treatable and preventable. Yet this is also our opportunity, because we know that large-scale action can defeat this disease in whole regions, and the world must take action.
Through the President's Malaria Initiative, which works with local governments, organizations, and multilateral agencies, the United States has committed $1.2 billion through 2008 in 15 countries in Africa. The goal is to cut malaria's mortality rate by half in the target countries, freeing these nations and their 175 million citizens from the grip of this debilitating disease. In the small, semi-autonomous region of Zanzibar, in Tanzania, where malaria is the leading cause of death, with aid from PMI, more than 230,000 people have been given insecticide-treated bed nets in recent years. The health service switched to ACTs in 2004, and targeted spraying in households is the third leg of their mosquito control campaign. Zanzibar has seen a startling decrease in its malaria cases and quicker recovery for those infected. We know these methods work. The challenge before us is to get these solutions to many more Africans today. The U.S. is, of course, not alone in bringing resources to the scourge of malaria. Widespread efforts are being spearheaded by the Global Fund, the World Bank, the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and American Red Cross, to name but a few. Non-governmental organizations, multilateral organizations, and corporations are delivering life-saving prevention and treatment to the people in Africa. In Niger, for example, Red Cross volunteers have been conducting a massive hang-up campaign, with armies of volunteers visiting families around the country. One campaign worker says, "The mosquitoes coming this year will find a formidable nationwide defense shield in almost every house in Niger." Private citizens and groups are also beginning to heed the call on malaria. Thanks to the charitable work of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, private resources have doubled for research into cheaper, better anti-malaria medicines, and even, one day, a vaccine. Although health experts caution a vaccine could be many years away from development and distribution. In the meantime, we need to concentrate on providing solutions for prevention and treatment. Solutions that already exist, that can save lives today.
This country was able to pretty much wipe malaria out, right? Now Africa's having a problem and we can help. So that's what we're talking about today, right?
It's not just governments and big organizations that can help. We all can help. Each of us can make a difference and save a life. Every person, even with a small amount of support, can literally save lives.
To fundraise too.
Raffle tickets, sponsors.
Like having malaria walk.
Like we recently had a Boys and Girls Club banner, we can have one support malaria.
Citizens and communities across the U.S. are joining the fight against malaria by raising awareness and funds to fight this deadly disease. There are new private sector efforts taking root every day, including one called Malaria No More, an inclusive, nonpartisan grassroots organization that aims to mobilize clubs or organizations to support their outreach and educational efforts. Whether it is materials for a church group, or to talk to its congregation, or a teacher to talk to her students, or a company that wants to make malaria its charity of the month and match employee donations. Through efforts like these, we can teach our children about the needs of others far away and show them that every person, from leaders from the largest corporations to the youngest child with the lemonade stand, can make a difference and save a life. The challenge before us is clear. Despite our efforts to date, 500 million people still fall ill with malaria and over 1 million die each year. In Africa, one child dies from malaria every 30 seconds. We can change that. Can we make malaria no more? Yes, we can. We know we can create healthier villages and stronger communities by adopting a comprehensive approach. One that has been shown to successfully wipe out this disease. We've done it before with smallpox. We're doing it with polio. Malaria is this generation's challenge. It is time.
You guys, but I was moved. No entity alone can eliminate malaria. Through the President's Malaria Initiative, PMI, which works with local governments, organizations, and multilateral agencies, the United States has committed $1.2 billion through 2008 in 15 countries. The goal is to cut malaria's mortality rate by half in the target countries, freeing these nations and their 175 million citizens from the grip of this debilitating disease. The U.S. is not alone in fighting malaria. The PMI is joined by both public and private organizations. Today, we'll hear representatives from these non-governmental organizations, foundations, multilateral organizations, and corporations helping the people of Africa with partnerships, resources, and boots on the ground. Our first discussion will be moderated by a man who has long been involved in foreign affairs. With his distinguished 31-year career in the Navy and his work as Executive Director of World Relief, Admiral Zimmer brings both efficiency and compassion to this position. Admiral Timothy Zimmer, the President's Malaria Initiative Coordinator.
Thank you, Isaiah, and good morning to all of you. Mrs. Bush, distinguished guests, friends, and colleagues in the fight against malaria. It's my distinct honor to lead the President's Malaria Initiative, combined with our good friends and interagency partners. CDC in Atlanta is forging a wonderful team with our USAID team members, and it's an exciting team to work with. The President's Malaria Initiative is committed to forging and leading successful partnerships with international organizations, with civic and faith-based groups, and with other donors. Ultimately, though, the most important partner is the country itself. While the PMI demonstrates the commitment of the American people by providing life-saving treatment, insecticide-treated nets, in support of a more aggressive spraying program, including the proper and judicious use of DDT, its primary aim is to assist endemic countries to build and maintain their own successful malaria control programs. Before I took this job, I talked to a respected friend and colleague, and when he asked me what I was going to do, and I told him, he shook his head, and he said, "There's too much suffering. There's too much red tape. There's too much bureaucracy in the government. You can't make a difference. Don't take the job." The challenge of malaria can certainly be insurmountable, can't it? But it's a challenge that we all must meet. And I can't think of a better place than to be here today with you to take on that cause. In June 2005, when President Bush took up the challenge of malaria, his initiative issued something akin to a wake-up call to the world, challenging governments and foundations and businesses and multilateral organizations to put actions behind rhetoric and to help end the suffering. The First Lady has been a remarkable leader and a spokesman for us, and we're so grateful for your support and your leadership. As a follow-up to the First Lady's announcement of the Malaria Communities Program, I'm looking forward to working with Jay Hine of the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives to host a follow-on meeting with interfaith leaders to tap their talents and their human potential and to learn how we can effectively work with our African faith and civic partners. This is just one aspect of engaging broader faith-based and community-based efforts in the Malaria Communities Program. I also appreciate the support of the United States Congress in supporting the President's Malaria Initiative, and I look forward to their continued support of his budget. I think it's important to note this morning, too, that in addition to the money being invested through the President's Malaria Initiative, over $459 million have come from our Treasury through the Global Fund to support malaria programs throughout the world. That's in addition to the monies going through the World Bank, World Health Organization, and other very important partners. The PMI is being implemented with unprecedented speed, and I view it as something of an emergency response. That urgency is justified, and it's paying off. The First Lady referred to already 6 million beneficiaries in just the initial startup work in three countries. Soon we will be engaging four additional countries, and there'll be millions more who will benefit from the treatment prevention programs. In line with Ambassador Tobias's leadership, the President's Malaria Initiative is based on his core principles of efficiency. Set goals, be accountable, and be transparent. Success is measured by outcomes, and in this business it means lives saved, not by the amount of money that we pour into the program. Success of the PMI will be judged by the effectiveness of our partnerships in the world. You'll note that the power of partnerships is really the unifying theme of today's summit. And to punctuate that, we're privileged to have two individuals with us to share how the PMI and their efforts are clearly making a difference. It's now my distinct pleasure to introduce Dr. Mohamed Jidawi, Permanent Secretary, Minister of Health for Zanzibar. Dr. Jidawi will give us a glimpse of the challenges and successes of the malaria control programs implemented in Zanzibar. Please greet and welcome Dr. Mohamed Jidawi,
as he comes forward.
Good morning, Mrs. Bush. Mrs. Bush, distinguished guests, as Tim said, I come from Zanzibar, a small island nation with a rich history from the days of being an East African trading post known as the Spice Islands to the launching of exploration of Africa led by Livingstone, Stanley and Burton to its uniting with Tanganyika to form the United Republic of Tanzania. The greatest scourge of Zanzibar and its 1 million people has always been malaria. But now, with the assistance of the President's Malaria Initiative, we are on the verge of conquering malaria. I am here today, ladies and gentlemen, to express my government's and my people's gratitude to the American President and the American people for this historic accomplishment. Until recently, malaria accounted for 50% of all children's deaths in Zanzibar, as well as being a burden on the health system, being responsible for half of all outpatient attendances. Think what it would mean to the people of my country to eliminate all these deaths and sufferings, and what it would mean to our economy, based on tourism and agriculture, to not have this drain on our productivity and reputation. Zanzibar is implementing its malaria control activities in line with the global goals and objectives of the President's Malaria Initiative. Since 2003, with support from the Global Fund and the Rollback Malaria Initiative, primarily funded by the American government, the Zanzibar Malaria Control Program has been treating malaria with ACTs. We are also using rapid diagnostic tests in clinics without laboratories and providing intermittent preventive therapy to all pregnant women. Malaria rates started to decline. Distinguished guests, with the launching of the PMI in December, in Zanzibar last December, we were more able to attack this killer. We started by providing 233,000 long-lasting insecticide-treated mosquito nets to all under-fives and pregnant women in Zanzibar. This was done in conjunction with the Global Fund in a great campaign in December and January when teams went house to house with nails, strings and information to ensure that all bed nets were appropriately hung and used. The results are amazing. Confirmed malaria cases in Pemba, an island comprising one-third of the population of Zanzibar, have been reduced by 87% in 2006 compared to 2005. Pediatric wards, which used to have two or three children per bed with malaria, are now nearly empty. Again, using PMI funds, we sprayed 203,754 residences, or 96% of all houses in Zanzibar between July and September this year, with long-lasting insecticides. We will repeat the indoor residual spraying in January 2007, thus giving the mosquitoes no chance. Zanzibar, ladies and gentlemen, is proud to serve as a great example that the PMI strategy works even in a resource-poor African nation. What we need now is to set up sustainable mosquito control activities, monitoring and rapid response teams so as not to allow malaria to resurge as it happened in the 60s and the 80s. Finally, I would like to say we greatly appreciate the PMI technical and financial assistance in this and the American vision and leadership in continuing the President's Malaria Initiative until the whole world is malaria-free. Thank you very much for your attention, and you are very much welcome to visit our soon-to-be malaria-free Spice Islands.
Thank you, Dr. Jadawi. I'm encouraged to hear the positive trends. What great news. But I assure you, your appeal to think long-term and about sustainability did not go unnoticed. Dr. Stephen Phillips, the medical director for ExxonMobil Corporation, is already a key partner in the fight against malaria and with PMI. Dr. Phillips will now share with us how ExxonMobil is partnering with local governments to fight malaria where they work. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Stephen Phillips.
Thank you, Admiral Zimmer. It is immensely gratifying to see this unprecedented gathering of so many champions in the fight against malaria. I would also like to thank First Lady and President Bush for hosting us and for their leadership on this issue. ExxonMobil is here today because our business presence in Africa has caused us to witness firsthand the devastating health and economic impact malaria has had on our workforce, their families, and the communities in which we operate. When you look at a map of Africa and overlay the pattern of malaria intensity with oil operations, there's a striking confluence. It is a strange coincidence that where there's oil, there are mosquitoes. And about 5 years ago, we decided to tackle this challenge head on. We put in place a comprehensive workplace malaria control program that covered every one of our African employees at risk. And I can now report that over nearly 3 years, we have recorded one case of malaria in our expatriate employees and zero cases of serious malaria in our national employees, involving a total of 12,000 person years at risk. We believe that this shows that malaria can be beaten. What does it take? Organization. We are not reveling in this success. The mosquito does not respect fence lines. Neither is it deterred by national boundaries. So in 2000, the ExxonMobil Foundation launched our Africa Health Initiative with the goal of making a difference in Africa's fight against malaria, reaching out beyond our operational footprint across communities and the continent to form partnerships to attack this scourge. Let me provide one example of a powerful partnership we have engaged in. In 2005, a memorandum of understanding was signed by our Angola company with the government of Angola, pledging cooperation in achieving national and PMI goals. Under this umbrella, and in response to an assessment of the needs of the National Malaria Control Program, we have funded 10 projects in Angola. These include a range of interventions from net distribution, malaria in pregnancy, pharmaceutical management, and results monitoring. Partners have included PMI, UNICEF, WHO, Population Services International, the UN Foundation, Safe Blood for Africa, Medicine, and JAPIGO. But Angola is only one of 16 African countries we are currently involved in, and we provided 28 new grants in 2006 alone. Over the past 6 years, our foundation has invested $30 million in advocacy, research and development, and field malaria control projects. From a business perspective, let me share a few observations from our on-the-ground experience. First, in the energy industry, we operate under the belief that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. We apply the same principle to malaria, and we are encouraging our partners to make the fight against this disease as integrated, efficient, and performance-oriented as our business operations. Second, we know from our expert colleagues that malaria is preventable and curable. Now, in an era of increased resources, political will, and effective tools, why have we not stopped this disease? One missing ingredient, we believe, is organization. This parasite thrives on disorganized human systems. Conversely, it is defeated by collaboration. A battle analogy is frequently applied to fighting malaria. A battle strategy calls for organized planning and logistics to deliver life-saving interventions to the front lines of the sick and vulnerable. Third, we frequently hear said, in addressing some of Africa's intractable development issues, that no one sector, government, or institution can solve the problem alone. We submit that this is not a conclusion, but a problem statement. When we reach a similar position regarding a business opportunity, we frequently share the risks and rewards related to a common objective by forming a joint venture partnership. This is an approach global health players might consider to make themselves accountable to each other in achieving results. In conclusion, we at ExxonMobil see this summit as tangible evidence that the tide is turning in this battle. We are proud to continue to do our part by announcing a further $10 million pledge in 2007. However, we recognize that although funding is important in its own right, its true value is in fostering new ideas to address this global health crisis and to build sustainable on-the-ground solutions to save lives. And we believe that when our commitment is amplified through the power of organization and partnerships, it is together that we will make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Phillips and Dr. Jadawi, for your remarks and for your contributions. It's key that the message here today is that we can't do this alone. We have to do it together. Another example of effective partnership comes to us from Uganda, where Malaria No More generously contributed $2 million for the purchase of over 330,000 long-lasting insecticide-treated nets. Their contribution was leveraged with $1.2 million from the President's Malaria Initiative, combined with Global Fund funding, which in fact allowed us to do the next year's net distribution plan for Uganda's National Malaria Control Plan. Ray Chambers, thank you for your leadership and the contribution of Malaria No More in this specific contribution. We must come together like this to leverage our expertise and our finances and our abilities and cooperate internationally in order to do the thing that's really important, and that's to build the capacity of our African partners and friends. We have the tools, the leadership, and the funding to reduce deaths now. And with at least 1 million lives at stake in the next 12 months, I believe our collective success and failure, or failure, will be our legacy. That's why we are here together, united in our resolve to save countless lives and not let that happen. With this in mind, it's now time to invite the distinguished speakers of the multilateral panel to join me on stage. These individuals lead organizations that have the mission, the disciplines, the resources, and technical capacity to advance malaria control efforts with our African partners. I now have the distinct pleasure to introduce the Honorable Professor Lamba, Minister of Health for the Federal Republic of Nigeria. He is also serving as chairman of the Board for Rollback Malaria. Professor Lamba. Dr. Richard Feachem, Executive Director of the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. Dr. Margaret Chan, Director General-elect of the World Health Organization. Madam, we collectively convey our congratulations on your new appointment, and we're grateful that you're here. The Honorable Ann Veneman, no stranger to any of us, Executive Director of the United Nations Children's Fund. And the Honorable Paul Wolfowitz, President of the World Bank.
Thanks again to all of you for being here. Your presence and your investment of time, I think, speaks volumes in terms of punctuating the fact that this is all about partnership at the multilateral effort. Thank you so much for being here. I want to pose the first question to Professor Lamba. As a Minister of Health for Africa's most populous country, sir, what are your challenges on the ground, and how can donors and organizations help you fight malaria in your country and elsewhere on the continent?
Good morning, Mrs. Bush, and invited participants.
I would like to respond to the question from two perspectives. First, as Nigeria's Minister of Health, and secondly, as the chair of the Robert Malaria Partnership. I want to underscore the fact that what is needed in Nigeria is also needed in other African countries. And partnership is a key consideration in fighting malaria. The challenges facing Nigeria include the following. The sheer size of the country, with an area of 1 million square kilometers, and a population of about 150 million people. That makes me Minister of Health with arguably the greatest, that has the greatest malaria challenge in the whole world. Two is the magnitude of the required resources. To deal with a health problem that is responsible for 60% of the outpatient visits to health facilities, 30% of childhood deaths, 25% of infant mortality, 11% of maternal deaths on a sustainable basis. The third challenge is the poverty of the population, which with most expenses for health paid out of pocket. This has made it difficult for most affected people to access malaria treatment services when they need this. Number four is the limited capacity of the health systems to effectively deliver cost-effective malaria interventions. Five is some cultural issues, such as poor knowledge about malaria and its causes, the negative attitudes towards preventive efforts, such as the use of bed nets, environmental sanitation. This has worsened the malaria scourge in Africa, in Nigeria and indeed Africa. Another challenge is the resistance of the malaria parasite to cheap drugs. Another one is inadequate political commitment by the lower levels of government in Nigeria. The federal government is very highly committed to fighting malaria, but we have two other levels of government, state and local government, and they are not as equally committed. And finally, is the inadequate capacity to coordinate the efforts of the stakeholders. There are many players, and then we have the problem of coordinating their various efforts. That's the answer to the first part of the question. Donors and organizations must align their efforts around country-owned and country-designed plans. They will have to come together to identify and fill the funding gaps needed to implement the national malaria plans on a sustainable basis. Technical assistance should not only aim at oiling the country's systems, but also strengthening them for effective malaria control. Fighting malaria requires all donors and organizations to work towards the same goal. And this same goal is ensuring that every malaria-endemic African country has the capability to implement its malaria control plan as quickly and as effectively as possible to achieve nationwide coverage with malaria prevention and treatment interventions, and thereby saving the millions of lives of Africans. The Rollback Malaria Partnership, of which I'm chairman, has evolved to help countries to meet these challenges. And I'm proud to have been closely involved in the RBM partners in revitalizing and refocusing the global partnership, which is now poised to make a significant difference at the country level. Finally, I want to say that donors and organizations need to make long-term commitment. This is very important. Malaria control is a marathon and not a sprint. Once we have succeeded in reducing malaria incidents, the illnesses, and the deaths, we must continue to work hard to keep their levels low. Premature declaration of victory that leaves endemic countries alone to continue the fight against malaria would not be ideal. We all need to dig in together to fight and sustain the war. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Lambeau. I see emerging constant themes in our comments. Dr. Feacham, welcome. As a tremendous advocate for malaria and the fight against malaria, and as head of the Global Fund, what needs to be done to help countries affected by malaria to be more effective and competitive in the Global Fund grant process?
Well, good morning. Good morning, Tim. Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here. Good morning, Mrs. Bush, and friends and colleagues. As others have said, we know how to prevent malaria and we know how to treat malaria. and the task now is to do it and do it on a large scale. Prevention, of course, depends on insecticide-treated bed nets, which cost $5 or $6 and last for 5 or 6 years, $1 a year, one of the best buys that's out there, and indoor residual spraying of houses with DDT and other insecticides. Treatment, of course, depends on prompt diagnosis, accurate diagnosis, and treatment with new drugs that work rather than with old drugs that don't work. And as many of you will know, the artemisinin combination therapy, which is now being increasingly used around the world, and particularly in Africa, costs now only 40 cents to treat a baby and $1.60 to treat an adult. The prices are falling, it's safe, and it works. The Global Fund has so far committed $2.6 billion to malaria programs in 84 countries. And in this audience, particularly, and with Mrs. Bush hosting us today, I want to mention that 30% of that money is provided by the people of the United States of America. And I want to thank you for being... I want to thank you for being the largest and most constant supporter of the Global Fund. Of that $2.6 billion, which has been committed to the 84 countries, $900 million has actually been spent by the men and women on the front line doing the hard part of this work. And that has given us substantial results, encouraging results. 18 million bed nets distributed, and when you do the maths, that turns into 370,000 lives saved. 20 million treatments with ACTs and other drugs, safe and effective treatments. But much, much more needs to be done, and much, much more is waiting to be done. And I think, as Admiral Zima's question implied, what needs to be done can be best done when we join forces and when we work together. Let me give three quick examples of the power of working together. What I believe to be Africa's most successful malaria control program today, the program in southern Mozambique, Swaziland, and northeastern South Africa, was actually initiated by the private sector. It was an aluminium smelting company that got that work underway. Others joined in. It's now an extraordinarily successful program involving governments, NGOs, the Global Fund, the President's Malaria Initiative, the Gates Foundation, and many, many others. It's a remarkable program, and it's been done together by joining forces. Second example, some of the most successful bed net distribution programs that we've seen in Africa in the last few years have been led by the Red Cross, funded by the Global Fund and others, and put on the back of polio immunization campaigns and measles immunization campaigns, joining forces with other parts of the health sector. And a final example, and I want to pay tribute to Professor Lambeau and Dr. Awa Kolsek, the leaders of the Rollback Malaria Partnership. A final example is that when countries apply to the Global Fund and they have been helped by the Rollback Malaria Partnership, 52% of their applications are successful. And when countries apply to the Global Fund and have not been helped by the Rollback Malaria Partnership, only 20% of their applications are successful, illustrating the power of well-coordinated, effective technical assistance. I and my colleagues at the Global Fund stand ready to work with new energy and new commitment with all here who are also committed to ending the ancient scourge of malaria. The President's Malaria Initiative, and I want to thank you, Tim, for your remarkable leadership of that initiative, which has become so effective in such a short space of time. WHO, the Rollback Malaria Partnership, the Gates Foundation, Malaria No More, the World Bank, Médecins Sans Frontières, and many others who are committed to rapid progress against the ancient scourge of malaria. My friend Rick Warren is with us today, and we discussed this a few days ago in Saddleback. I think the faith-based organizations, under his leadership and the leadership of others, are now becoming increasingly engaged in the fight against malaria. And I really applaud and welcome that. There is a church in every village. That those churches and those congregations can be distributing bed nets and educating men and women about ways to prevent malaria. And if I can be permitted once again, Ray, to suggest a new mantra, I think purpose-driven sleeping is now an opportunity for us. In closing, I would like to pay special tribute to President and Mrs. Bush for their outstanding leadership in the field of malaria and for causing us all to be here today, the first time that this group has ever gathered. And finally, let me say that I think that the company Nike have the right slogan for our efforts on malaria. Just do it. Thank you.
Dr. Feacham, thank you very much. Lots of passion and support there. And I'm pleased to announce that the President's Malaria Initiative is looking at investing about $350,000 to provide technical assistance for Global Fund grant processing. So we're with you on that. Dr. Chan, again, welcome and congratulations. I'm sure I won't be the first nor the last person to ask you, as the new DG-elect, what is it that the World Health Organization does for all of us, and what are you going to do to provide the leadership and take WHO forward in the future?
Thank you very much, Chairman. First and foremost, Mrs. Bush, distinguished guests, good morning. I would like to start by expressing my deep, heartfelt gratitude to the President's Malaria Initiative. As Richard has put it, this initiative has achieved a great deal of good in so short a time. And we know from experience, you can only do that with good leadership, good planning, and most of all, the goodwill of the American people. Thank you very much. Malaria is a very complex and a very difficult disease, yet it is treatable and preventable. How do we deal with this paradox? Malaria is a problem that is too big for any agency or any country to tackle on its own. So therefore, initiative like this one is very much welcome. And this is a perfect model for public-private partnership, and we would like to see more of it. Another thing we learned from this is that speaking as a United Nations agency, oftentimes we are criticized for being very bureaucratic, for very insular. This is something we can learn from the corporate sector. We need to take inspiration from their supply chain management. If a soft drink can get to the farthest corner of the world, why can't we get our drugs and our bed nets? So we need to ask that question. At the World Health Organization, earlier this year, we recognized that we are not winning the malaria battle fast enough. So we change our tactic, we change our strategy. Now we have the Global Malaria Program in place. As I said, this is a very complex disease. It is a very tenacious killer, and we have to be aggressive, and we have to be tough, and we do not need to apologize for that. And we feel that at WHO, as a matter of priority, I would like to make sure that we do everything, first and foremost, to protect the effectiveness of the drugs that are helping us, the drug that we refer to as ACT. So WHO negotiated with drug makers and convinced them that we should only put on the market ACT and not monotherapy. That's not easy, but we need to take it. We need to bite the bullet. The second thing is we need to encourage research and development in coming up with new tools, be it drugs or diagnostic. So WHO can do that, and we will work with our partners. The second important thing is we need to nurture more partnerships, public-private partnerships like this one, who can deliver life-saving solutions to the home. And this is what I mean. In WHO, if you recall, one of my commitments in the next few years is to cultivate value-added strategic partnership. There are a lot of partnerships, but we need value-added strategic and creative partnerships. Last but not the least, in the field of malaria, there is a lot of fragmentation. There's a lack of good data for us to plan policies, good strategies. So we need to do a better job, and WHO will take this on board. We will monitor the situation, make sure we evaluate our interventions. We know what works best, what doesn't work. These information will feed back into refining our policies, our strategies, and our action plan. The objective is to get maximum impact out of the things that we are doing. And we are committed to doing that. We must do that. And now we have an ideal sort of situation where people from different sectors are coming together. All the sectors that have been referred to by Richard, and I'm not going to repeat them. All of you are very important, and there's a lot of new commitment, new energy. We must do it. We must seize this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Chan. I'm looking forward to working with you, and I'm sure my panelists are too. Anne, you are, and UNICEF is, the champion for children around the world. How are your efforts on the ground helping kids prevent from getting malaria and keeping them alive?
Well, thank you very much, and thank you. Let me add my words of thanks to the President and Mrs. Bush for this very, very important initiative, because it really is so much about the children. We've talked about a lot of numbers today, but let me just put them in a bit of a different perspective. There are about 10 million children who die every year of largely preventable causes, primarily disease and malnutrition. Of those, 5 million are in Africa. 50% of the deaths are in Africa, despite the fact that Africa has only 11% of the population. Of these 5 million deaths, 1 million can be attributed to malaria. So fully 20% of the child deaths in Africa are from malaria. So I commend this initiative for focusing on malaria and focusing on Africa, because it really is where the disease is most impacting. In UNICEF, we have found that in distributing bed nets, in addressing the issue of malaria, it is very important to address this through integrated community-based healthcare approaches. In other words, bed nets need to be a part of basic community healthcare for mothers and children. Giving bed nets when you come in for prenatal care, mothers getting the bed nets as part of their overall preparedness for delivering a child, and then also giving bed nets as a part of an integrated approach in giving vitamin A supplementation, immunizations, polio, and so forth when the children come in for basic health care. Along with this, it's very important that you educate particularly the mothers on how to properly use the bed nets. Another very successful approach in terms of addressing the use of bed nets, distribution of bed nets, has been in the campaign approach. And that is, for example, UNICEF has worked closely with partners in Angola, including the President's Malaria Initiative, to distribute bed nets along with campaigns for measles vaccinations. Another double dividend, so to speak, in saving children's lives. So the campaign approach is another area in which we can be very effective. I want to add my support for how important it is that we are all here today as partners to address this issue, to save lives, to work together, to build on the success that each of our organizations has seen, to work with the private sector to address this very important issue that is so critical to saving the lives of mothers and children throughout the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anne. Paul, as president of the World Bank, I know you have a passion and you're committed to doing something about malaria. Could you just give us a glimpse of the effect of malaria on the economies in Africa and what the World Bank is doing about it?
Happy to. I'm going to mention some statistics, and I think it's important to think of what's behind the statistics. In fact, we have heard several times that horrible statistic of 1 million children dying a year or 3,000 a day. But just stop and think of September 11, 2001, when 3,000 people died in one day in this country, and think of what it did to us, and then imagine that that's happening every day, day after day in Africa. But the kids who die are the worst tragedy, but it's not the end of the tragedy. The ones who survive are sick. In many African countries, we have millions of children that are missing 4 weeks, on average, 4 weeks of school. Imagine your kids trying to get a decent education when they're sick 4 weeks out of every school year. And then you think about the parents that have to stay home to take care of those kids missing 4 weeks of work. It's a huge drain on the economy, and these are very, very poor economies. In Nigeria, the per capita income is just a little bit over $400. Imagine your family trying to survive on $400 a person, and then imagine that 13% of that $400 every year is going for malaria treatment. It is a huge drain on economies, and some estimates are that it's costing African countries as much as $12 billion a year, a staggering number. I mean, it makes even the generosity we're talking about here today with respect to malaria, it dwarfs it. So there's a huge economic gain to be achieved by conquering this disease. It will more than pay for the investment. You asked, what's the World Bank doing? I think, first of all, it's important to repeat what's been said here. No one of us can do this alone. It is a partnership. It's public-private. It's private corporations. It's faith-based groups. As an American, Mrs. Bush, I'm incredibly proud of the President's Malaria Initiative and the work Tim Zimmer is doing and the contributions to many organizations. As head of the World Bank, I want to say I'm proud of what the bank is doing, and to the American taxpayer, I want to tell you you're getting good value for your money. For every 13 cents of American money, we're leveraging a dollar of contributions. We work at the World Bank with ministries of health, like Minister Lambos, and I think it's only fair to say that in the first half of this decade, none of us were putting a sufficient priority on malaria. The result was in 5 years, in the first half of the decade, World Bank only put $150 million, just $30 million a year, into malaria campaigns. We looked at that. We created 15 months ago something called the Malaria Booster Program, and I'm very happy to say that now we've already committed $357 million to some 10 countries, plus the Senegal River Basin Project that covers another four. And just 2 days ago, my board approved the single biggest program to Nigeria to help Minister Lambo in the seven most vulnerable states of Nigeria with a grant of $180 million. Very happy about that. And there's more coming. Our goal is to reach $500 million in the 3 years of this program. But money is just the start. It has to be applied in the right way. We have to coordinate with other donors. Most of all, we have to monitor results. We have to see what's actually happening on the ground. And as Dr. Chan has said in a meeting we had yesterday, malaria in Africa is tougher than anywhere else in the world, and what works in some places may not work in others. Earlier this year, in Abuja, in Nigeria, we agreed on the Abuja targets so that all of the donors and all of the 20 governments are going to aim at the same results, and we're going to measure ourselves and monitor ourselves, and this disease can be licked, and it must be licked. Thank you.
To the entire panel, thank you so much for your time, and I want to compliment you on managing the time clock so well. It was an unenviable task that I had. I look forward to working with all of you again, and thanks again for your time, your investment. Again, your presence here today is significant and has not gone unnoticed. Let's please give our panel a round of applause.
The task before us clearly is to combine and coordinate our efforts and move forward with urgency and with focus. We have a remarkable opportunity as we look to the future. But it's sobering, too, because we have to hold ourselves accountable for the results. I'm encouraged by the reports today, the commitment to partnership. I think we all recognize it's going to be a long fight, but it's worth it. There's reason to be hopeful. Together, we can be more effective. Together, we can raise more resources. Together, we can save more lives. Let's all commit to working towards that end. Now, I have the distinct honor of introducing Melinda Gates, co-chairman of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. She's a distinguished business leader who is now directing her energy to build awareness and significantly addressing public health issues and threats worldwide. We're really grateful to have her with us today. We're grateful for her leadership, her partnership, and the support in this global fight against malaria. Please join me in welcoming Melinda Gates.
Thanks so much. Thank you for that kind introduction, and thank you, the First Lady, for hosting this very important summit. If the global partners fighting malaria had gotten together about a decade ago, I think they might have fit in the broom closet in the back of this building. I would certainly not have been here. Malaria wasn't something Bill and I had thought a whole lot about back then. We were starting to read the mortality and morbidity reports, those exciting reports that are there, and seeing the numbers. But we certainly had not yet internalized the problem that was going on in Africa with malaria, because I think, like many people, many Americans, it's not something we face in our own country today, and so we don't think about it that much until you see it in action on the continent of Africa. But in the past few years, many of you here have worked really tirelessly to push this issue to the top of the global health agenda, and for that, we really, really thank you for your efforts. The Nothing But Nets campaign, promoted by Sports Illustrated and sponsored by the United Nations Foundation, the Methodist Church, the NBA, will continue to get sports fans engaged in the fight against malaria. Exxon, as we heard earlier, and other companies are here demonstrating the crucial role that businesses are going to play in this fight. Malaria No More is a brand new group, and I hope it will inspire millions of Americans to join this really, really important cause. The President's Malaria Initiative has pledged more than $1 billion to fight this disease. This is an enormous step forward for this nation. And it joins the ongoing efforts that are already happening with WHO, Rollback Malaria, the Global Fund, the World Bank, our own foundation, and many other groups who are working to conquer malaria. If we all work together, we will succeed. We already have the tools. We know that bed nets and insecticides protect people from malaria, and we know that treating people who are sick can absolutely save their lives. We've seen that time and again. But now we really need to deliver nets, and we need to deliver the insecticides to people at risk of getting the disease, and we need to really treat those who are already ill. We also need to keep pushing research into better treatments and insecticides. And one day, we will have the ultimate solution, which we believe is a vaccine. Once we have a malaria vaccine, it's going to take everybody in this room to do exactly what we're trying to do today with nets and insecticides. We're going to have to make sure that we deliver a vaccine to the developing world. So I'm confident that we'll deliver the tools we have and develop the tools because we here in the wealthy nations are starting to recognize, finally, the urgency of this problem. Until recently, I think many Americans probably didn't know that malaria existed, but creative efforts like those of Rick Riley's columns in Sports Illustrated have helped spread the word. I have to admit, Sports Illustrated is not on my reading bedstand at night. I have some really exciting things like disease control priorities in developing countries. You can see how I sleep really well after reading something like that. But I have younger brothers who read Sports Illustrated regularly, and as soon as those columns came out, they were in my inbox because my younger brothers were so inspired by those columns, and they weren't somebody that knew much about malaria before, and I thought, gosh, we really are getting people to understand what the issues are. So now that we know we're going after malaria, we're doing it, I think, because we are compassionate people. But I'm also here to say that we expect results. And I love to hear that when you hear about the businesses on the ground like Exxon, that they're looking at this like a business problem. Because the bottom line here is saving lives, and it can be done. Bill and I have seen firsthand what success looks like. In fact, just 3 years ago, we traveled to a hospital in Mozambique. It was a research station, and we were there really to look at the research going on with the intermittent preventative therapy, both for pregnant women and infants, that was going on. But while we were at the research clinic, we also visited the hospital. And there we met a young girl. In fact, she was pictured in the video earlier, who was quite sick with malaria. She was shivering with fever, and she was on the verge of death. In fact, while we were there, the doctors were quite afraid she wasn't going to make it through the night and be there the next day. And I remember looking at down at her on that bed and touching her, and I was thinking, if this is an American child who was sick, she wouldn't be suffering. Her mother sat nearby, and she was gently stroking her daughter's head. And when I talked with her after they were finished shooting the video, she talked about that this was her second child that had been stricken with malaria, and she lost her first one. And she was naturally quite concerned about her baby girl. But I'm here to say that today, that girl we met is alive and healthy. A miracle happened to this beautiful young girl. She received the drugs she needed to clear the malaria parasite from her body and was caught literally just in time. Governments, businesses, foundations, and nonprofit groups are now working together to see that the miracle that happened with that little girl is repeated millions of times until it's not a miracle anymore. It literally needs to become standard and routine. That's the idea behind the anti-malaria partnership in Zambia known as MSEPA. It's a malaria control and evaluation partnership, which is one of the things that our foundation supports. And the government of Zambia has joined with the nonprofit groups in that country and the funders to scale up malaria prevention and treatment so it literally becomes countrywide in a place like Zambia. And so just last March, I was in Zambia. I wanted to meet the health workers. I wanted to meet the leadership. I met with the health minister all the way down to the district leaders, the NGOs in the country, and the people who are literally getting the bed nets from procuring them to point of distribution out to mothers in the villages. And so one of the villages I went out to was a town called Kaifue. And there I learned from the health workers and the mothers in the village that literally every family had lost at least one person in the village, in their family, to malaria. And yet, the village that I visited still didn't have enough bed nets to go around. So imagine being a pregnant woman, knowing how vulnerable you and your newborn baby are, and sometimes unborn baby if you're pregnant, are to malaria, and yet having absolutely no way to protect yourself. Imagine being the health worker in that village. You must choose which family gets a net and which one doesn't. Imagine being the parent who has to decide at night which of your two children, or three or four or eight, get to sleep under that malaria bed net when only two children can fit, or only a pregnant mother and child can fit. So you have to make that very crucial decision each and every night. Nobody should have to make those decisions, and in Zambia, they won't anymore. Last year, as part of this new program, the government of Zambia decided that they would distribute more than 500,000 bed nets. And Zambia is making dramatic progress toward its goal of literally a net for every person who needs one. And when you see the collaboration that's happening on the ground to make that happen, it's really quite amazing. So what I saw in Zambia that was so effective is what we've decided to do here as a community, which is to take an accomplishment and really make it happen. Our foundation has announced a $20 million grant just recently, this past Monday, to expand this particular MSEPA control program to five other nations in Africa. And we also announced new grants to accelerate research on malaria drugs, vaccines, and diagnostic tests, and to support the Rollback Malaria Partnership. The unprecedented attention, resources, and new science that we as a community in this room have put us all in a position now to win the fight on malaria. However, I'm here to say we have even more to do. We need to close the gap in funding, and we have to accelerate the science. Most of all, we need to work together and commit to a coordinated global strategy. This strategy would take into account the lessons we've all learned so far. It would tap into our individual strengths and make sure our work doesn't overlap, so that together we can help developing countries win this fight by making the most of the collective resources that we have, much like what I saw on the ground happening in Zambia. I hope that we as a community can all make that pledge together today, because wiping out malaria could join the eradication of smallpox as one of the greatest achievements in human history. It's a goal we can achieve in our lifetimes. And Bill and I are committed to working alongside all partners in this room and in this effort to make sure that malaria is no more. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you once again to Mrs. Melinda Gates. Now, please welcome back to the stage the Children of Agape.
You, because you took care of me. When I was younger, the moon was a giant ball just for us to bounce. And one baby step was a wonder to me.
Now the moon is nothing but a crate.
And the step is one of many, but one thing is the same.
I want to be you, mother, because you take care of me. Are you no longer?
Wonderful. These public-private partnerships are providing resources in raising awareness of the urgency to fight malaria. But it's not just governments and big organizations that can help. We can all help. One organization helping every person to join the fight is Malaria No More, a grassroots organization led by Ray Chambers. Malaria No More aims to work with clubs or organizations to support their outreach and educational efforts, especially to young people. Malaria No More has the goal of raising enough funds that, when combined with other efforts, will provide a bed net to virtually every family in sub-Saharan Africa that needs one. And that people from corporate CEOs to a Girl Scout troop can make a difference. Please welcome a philanthropist and a humanitarian who has directed most of his efforts toward at-risk youth, Mr. Ray Chambers, chairman of Malaria No More.
Thank you, Isaiah, Mrs. Bush. It's a pleasure to be here. When the White House first announced the summit on malaria, Professor Jeffrey Sachs said, we really need to applaud the President and First Lady. This is the most important thing to happen for malaria in several decades. And as most of you know, Jeff has never been mistaken for a Republican. And to hear him say that really had an impact on me. And as we thought through what this administration has done with PEPFAR, the Millennium Challenge Account, the President's Malaria Initiative, and now the White House Summit on Malaria. That's better. Thank you. And I was speaking with Mrs. Bush the other night, and I know of the commitment of the President and the First Lady to do as much as they can by the end of their administration to bring an end to malaria. So would you please join me in thanking President and Mrs. Bush for all of their efforts on malaria. I'd also like to thank the President's Chief of Staff, Josh Bolton, the First Lady's Chief of Staff, Anita McBride, and my two cohorts, Gary Edson and John Bridgeland, for helping to organize this summit. I was in Africa in January with Jeff Sachs and others from Millennium Promise who are here today. And we met a lot of children in the different villages, some healthy, some sick. And when we returned, Jeff showed me a photo of this room of beautifully sleeping children. And I said, aren't they cute? And he said, you don't understand. They're all in malaria comas, and they subsequently died. And I can't get that image out of my mind's eye. So we thought about, how do we help bring an end to this disease? And we learned all the statistics that have been recited here tonight. And yet, just last week, our friends Sheila Kearney and Jim Clifton at Gallup did a poll and found out that malaria was viewed by Americans as the least serious disease in the world. So in response to the need for collaboration that you've heard tonight and to bring the private sector, the business sector, the individuals in America to become more and more engaged, we're launching here today, Malaria No More, a grassroots partnership to raise awareness and to ask each and every American to set aside $10 to purchase a bed net and save a child's life. And one woman said to me, that's the cost of three lattes. Then she thought and said, except if you're in New York, it's two lattes. This disease, these mosquitoes, don't discriminate by race, creed, religion. Therefore, this collaboration must be all-inclusive. And we really want to bring together so many different sectors and people who don't know about malaria, raise that awareness, and have this ultimate collaboration. And just the other night, the wonderful members of the CORE Club in New York had a party to raise $1 million for Malaria No More. Fred Matzer has started Malaria No More, the Netherlands, and he intends to bring it throughout Europe. Member of Parliament Belinda Stronach has started Spread the Net in Canada, and that's catching on across Canada. This partnership is so important, and it should involve everybody from all the sectors of which we've spoken. We know that with bed nets, with vector control, with medication, we can bring an end to this disease. I'd also like to thank the Abbott Fund for providing the financing for the Nets Are Nice books that will wind up in the hands of every first grader, every fifth grader, and every sixth grader in the United States. So all we have to do now is raise awareness, promote collaboration, and exert that will, as in, we will not stop until malaria is no more. I'd like to introduce two of our board members, Mr. Ed Scott, the founder of the Friends of the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, and Mr. Tim Shriver of Special Olympics.
Thank you very much, Ray. It's certainly an honor and a pleasure to be here as a member of the board of Malaria No More, and I want to say that perhaps one of the most relevant pieces of experience I have with respect to participating in this board is that I grew up in Panama. And as you perhaps recall from Isaiah Washington's remarks in the movie, 100 years ago, this disease was brought under control in Panama. And it was brought under control by really organization. As Dr. Phillips of Exxon said, this disease thrives on disorganization, and organization is what it's really all about. And I can remember my grandmother yelling at me when I was a little boy to get in the house at dusk to avoid being bit by mosquitoes, or yelling at my grandfather to repair holes in the screening so that the mosquitoes would not enter the house. But this is all about will. It's all about organizing ourselves. This is a disease we beat once before 100 years ago. We can clearly beat it again. And with the kind of people who are gathered here today, I'm very confident we will. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ray. Mrs. Bush, your leadership once again is a standout for our country and for the world, and we're grateful for your presence and the President's leadership on this. I'm here representing Malaria No More. My day-to-day job is trying to provide support and leadership to over 2 million athletes in the movement we call Special Olympics, and I see my role there largely as a teacher. I try to be a teacher of fundamental lessons. The children, adults with disabilities are not weak and vulnerable and pitiful, but strong, gifted, capable of contributing. And also to teach those who are strong and seen as gifted and capable that in giving, they can receive so much more in return. This is the message and the challenge of Malaria No More, to take those lessons to children, to take them to young people. If we had to look at the track record, as Melinda Gates said, of the last 10 or 20 or 30 years, we haven't done enough. And we are here because we have failed as a global community. Now we are issuing the challenge to children, and we are saying without a doubt that we are not going to be afraid to ask. We are not going to be afraid to issue a call to young people to engage themselves, to give, give, give. Because we know in asking them that we are giving them the chance to make a difference, which is what they all want. And we are also not going to issue a challenge to see children of Africa as pitiful, as pathetic, as sad, as tragic figures, but rather as gifted, strong children, children who can contribute, children who can live full lives. We will teach those lessons in our schools, and we will invite African children to join with their American and international counterparts in a recognition that compassion, when taught, is a gift that one gives and a gift that one receives in the same act. And that compassion to one child is compassion to yourself. And that the dignity of every child is a message that has no room for pity, only room for dignity. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the Boys and Girls Club of America, please welcome the President, Roxanne Spillett, and the youth representatives of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Newark, Daquan Foster from the Broadway Unit, Asa Harris from Central Ward Unit, Ibn Towns from West Side Unit, Nicole Rivera from Broadway Unit, Jasmine Johnson from Central Ward Unit, and their CEO, Felix Rouse.
We are all so excited to be here on this important day. And Mrs. Bush, thank you for caring so deeply about all the world's children. We know you do, and we're grateful for you for that. I'm here representing Boys and Girls Clubs of America, and these are some of the finest young people in the world. And they're here because they have a commitment to what brings us all together today. Boys and Girls Clubs of America has entered into a partnership with Malaria No More, a partnership that fits perfectly with our century-long mission of helping young people become compassionate, caring citizens who give to others less fortunate than themselves. So we're reaching out to our network of 4,000 clubs here in the U.S. and on military bases across the world. And we're asking all of our clubs and all of our club leaderships and the over 4.6 million young people whose lives we reach, we're asking them to generate ideas. We're asking them to call their friends to action. We're asking them to raise awareness, and we're asking them to raise money to fight malaria. We're also incorporating, thank you. we're also incorporating the concept of Malaria No More in our private and public youth website called YouthNet. And this YouthNet is by teens, our club teens, for all teens. And the message on that website is all about Malaria No More. It's not just engaging the kids in our clubs, but teens everywhere in the fight against malaria, because we know that knowledge and understanding of a problem is where compassion truly begins. So over the next year, the Boys and Girls Clubs plan to get very active in this regard. We plan to get more clubs and more club members actively involved in educating others about Malaria No More. Now, my friends here are very engaged from the Boys and Girls Clubs of Newark in this effort, and we're going to hear from them in a minute. But they're part of a broader effort, a broader and more important effort for us to reach beyond the walls of our clubs to encourage our young people about the importance of engaging and informing and motivating others. Now, historically, this is something our organization feels very, very committed to. We believe that our children are children who care deeply about others. And yes, they're citizens of America, but they're also citizens of the world. And that's why they rose to the occasion to help Afghan children and also engage in the tsunami relief effort. Our kids have been there to help other kids in need. Now, let me end my little part by quoting a six-year-old from one of our clubs in Illinois who, when asked about a problem, said this, her contribution. A bunch of different people can make one good world. We believe in this, too. We're a proud participant in Malaria No More. You have our full support. And as Olivia says, we can all help this to be one good world. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Asa Harris, and I'm a member of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Newark's Central Ward Unit. As Ms. Follette stated, we have been busy brainstorming and putting our ideas together to work to find significant ways to help overcome the menace of malaria. So far, we have created a web page for malaria. We are using the web page in a positive way to spread the word to our network friends on the severity of malaria. We have also produced a video that can be seen on YouTube.com. The 5-minute hard-hitting video shows the effects of malaria and asks people to make a difference by getting involved and supporting our efforts to wipe out malaria. On December 1st, our Westside unit hosted a teen party where 370 teens helped to raise $430. To date, our Malaria No More projects have raised $1,200. Thank you. There is still much to be done, and we are committed to staying to the course, spreading the word and showing others, young and old, that by working together, all of us can help malaria, make malaria a thing of the past in Africa. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Daquan Foster, and I'm a member of the Boys and Girls Club of Newark Broadway Unit. As you can see, we are very serious about the Malaria Project. Not only have we done a video and a web page, we've done several presentations throughout the Newark community. We were at Seton Hall earlier this week spreading the word about malaria. As a part of Malaria Awareness Week, the Boys and Girls Club of Newark will be hosting activities and events to educate the youth, their parents, and the community about malaria. Some of the activities include educational workshops, internet research projects, bake sales, quiz bowls, community presentations, and a malaria victory party. This is just the beginning of many activities and projects we will be hosting throughout the year to raise funds and awareness about malaria. For more information on our current and future projects, visit our website at www.bgcn.org. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the National Basketball Association, please welcome Kathleen Behrens, Senior Vice President, Community and Player Programs, along with Ruth Riley, Detroit Shock, WNBA, Andrea Stinson, former player, WNBA, Darvin Ham, former player, NBA. Jim Jackson, former player, NBA. And Sam Perkins, former player, NBA.
Thank you very much, and good morning. I brought some good and tall friends here with me to help me. Mrs. Bush, we're delighted to be working with you again, and we are honored to be here. Like many, we were inspired last year by Sports Illustrated columnist Rick Riley. It wasn't just Melinda's brothers. It was all of us and sports fans around the world who were inspired by Rick's challenge to donate $10 to send a net to save a life for children in Africa. And with that, and thanks to the leadership of Kathy Bushkin and the UN Foundation, Nothing But Nets was born. We're delighted to be working with Sports Illustrated, with the UN Foundation, with Malaria No More, and with the people of the United Methodist Church on this campaign. Just going to tell you a little bit about what we're hoping to do with it. And that's our mission. Our mission is to get long-lasting insecticide-treated bed nets to children and families who would otherwise unfortunately die without them. It's that simple. Over the next 2 years, Nothing But Nets, working with the Measles Initiative, will provide nets to families in Africa, focusing specifically on children under the age of five. To date, we have raised over $1.7 million. We have already done one bed net distribution in Nigeria of 150,000 nets, and we look forward to doing even more. The key message for this campaign is to let people know how simple this is, how powerful, but how simple. And the simple way is this. You log on to Nothing But Nets. You make a donation of $10 to purchase a net. That net is then distributed to a family. They are also educated on its use. They are helped with by the healthcare worker, community healthcare worker, to properly hang the net. And that net will save the life of a child for up to 4 years with its proper use. But the real important work that we're going to be doing, all of my friends, is getting the message out to people. And we're going to use the considerable marketing and PR clout of the NBA and the WNBA to do that. We're going to start in January with an event at our NBA store on Fifth Avenue. We're going to be encouraging people to help us cover Africa. More than 20 NBA and WNBA teams are going to be doing in-arena nights, basically focusing on awareness and fundraising efforts. In addition to these terrific athletes and role models, other players, Luol Deng, Sagana Jop, Kyle Korver, will be joining other NBA and WNBA players, acting as spokespeople, participating in PSAs, grassroots events, helping at fundraisers, and basically spreading the word about the importance of this campaign. We're also going to be doing a PSA campaign with VH1. We're going to be using our NBA broadcasts on ABC, Turner, and ESPN to make sure that people, our fans who are watching the games, millions around the world, understand what this campaign is and how they can help. And we'll be using all of our NBA assets, our internet, our TV station, to present information as well to our fans. In addition, we've got to raise money. This campaign is only going to be successful, so we're going to activate around our more than 2.5 million children and parents who participate in our junior NBA program. We're going to be going out doing grassroots events with all of them. We're going to be using our high-profile events like NBA All-Star. We're going to be using our NBA store, our in-arena opportunities to help spread the word and raise funds. And then, very importantly, we're going to make sure that the people who need the nets get them. We're starting in January. Sam Perkins will be traveling to Nigeria with Nothing But Nets to participate in the distribution. And we're going to be doing other distributions as part of our Basketball Without Borders program when we return to South Africa this summer. For the fifth consecutive year, we're going to be doing bed net distributions throughout Africa as part of that campaign as well. So our message is very simple. We're going to use the power, the social responsibility that we take very seriously at the NBA and WNBA to get the message out to our fans that this is an easy way to literally send a net and save a life. We're delighted to be a part of this campaign, and we urge everyone to continue to participate with us. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Brian A. Gallagher, President and Chief Executive Officer of United Way of America, and Angelina Wapakabulo, Executive Director of United Way of Uganda Executive Committee.
Thank you and good morning, Mrs. Bush. Thank you for your leadership. It's, you know, the environment is changing so quickly, economically, socially, politically. We knew that the need was also becoming, the human need, much more compelling as we were more interconnected as a globe. So when John Bridgeland brought us this opportunity with such a compelling, simple idea that really saved lives, we knew that at United Way, we had to get involved. I had a mentor early in my career that reminded me that where resources meet need, there is responsibility. And so as the largest private fundraiser in the U.S., we knew we had the responsibility to get involved. So our commitment today is to give the opportunity to at least 4 million employees of the Fortune 500 corporate partners that we engage with every year in the country to purchase mosquito nets. And secondly, to give millions more the opportunity through the 1,300 local United Ways across the country to do the same thing, the opportunity not just to build awareness, but for $10 to save a life. We'll also be involved in monitoring and evaluation to make sure that the resources that our donors commit are used properly and appropriately. We, as you've heard, have affiliates in 45 countries around the world, including United Way Uganda. So it's my pleasure now to turn it over to Mama Angelina, the Vice Chair of the United Way Uganda Board.
On behalf of the children, the women, the communities who are out there and least able to fight malaria, I want to say thank you, Mrs. Bush, the President, and all of you in your various capacities who are engaged in the fight against malaria. While growing up as a young person, I grew up in a small village where there was a disease, and there is a disease called Nyavana. Mwana is a child. And this disease always caused the child to have fever, to have convulsions, and eventually we would say the child has gone mad. Eventually the child would die. I survived, but many others died. I survived because I was near a Catholic mission where I was able to access medical services. But as we speak today, in my own country, Nyavana, which I later came to learn is malaria, cerebral malaria, is still there and killing up to 30,000 children a year. United Way in Uganda is eager to partner in the efforts to make sure that malaria is no more. In that regard, we wish, as a board of United Way Uganda and other United Ways across the continent, we wish to engage government, NGOs, academicians, faith-based institutions, as well as the civic and other leaders to ensure that indeed the mosquito nets, the other services that will be provided, will actually reach the most needy and those who need them, so that together malaria no more will be a reality rather than a dream. United Way Uganda, United Way from Africa, will be part of that effort. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Honorable Bonnie McElveen Hunter, Chairman, American Red Cross.
Thank you, Mrs. Bush, distinguished guest. I stand before you this morning as a daughter, a sister, a wife, a mother, a business owner, a former U.S. ambassador, and now chairman of the board of the American Red Cross, an organization that I have seen that reaches out to the least and the last and the lost at their most critical hour of need, as I did in a Darfur refugee camp just 1 month ago in Chad. I stand here also reminded of my grandfather's great, wise admonition It's more important to select your partners than to select your business. And the people in this room, the power of this partnership has the ability to change the course of history. The American Red Cross is proud to be a part of that critical partnership. Our founder said that into your hands the charge is laid. When a nation cries out suffering as a result of drought or war, when a child cries out in need of measles vaccination or protection from the deadly scourge of malaria, we must be there. We must be there answering the cries, sometimes so loud they reverberate around the globe, others so softly they can barely be heard. We have heard the cries of Africa. We have vaccinated 217 million children in 41 countries from measles, but there is much to do. We are referred to as the army, the boots on the ground. Well, let me just tell you that this is an army of hope, and we are committed to be a part of eliminating malaria across this continent. We are pledging today to activate our army of hope, including mothers' clubs, who are made up of, yes, wives and mothers and grandmothers, to reach out with 50,000 new volunteers and to reach out to over 10 million people. The needs are enormous. And I think when you go to Africa, you recognize there is such great capacity and great opportunity. But you're faced with so many realities of, do you curse the darkness or light a candle? And the candle and glimmer of hopes that I have seen, even in the refugee camps, were six babies that were born that weighed between 6 and 10 pounds, certainly a gift of a healthy start. But surely malaria, a preventable disease, should not be allowed to distinguish those candles of hope of the lives of those precious children of Africa. So it is my pleasure today to also represent and to present to you one of our very able leaders in Africa. Malaria has much work to do. We can do this together, and we're great to have the partnership of the brilliantly erudite and dedicated president of the Ethiopian Red Cross, Shimolis Adunga, who also represents us in the International Federation of Red Cross Families. Shimolis?
I'm honored today to join you as an African, as a grandfather, and one of 73,000 Ethiopian Red Cross volunteers to say thank you to the American Red Cross and the American government and the American people for volunteering to fight our fight by joining the effort to eradicate and eliminate this killer disease, malaria. As a child, I saw the impact of malaria. I remember seeing people in the hospital beds, every one of them shaking like a leaf. I remember seeing so many children in hospital beds in Kenya when I was a refugee child. I remember so many who were not as lucky. I survived, but they did not. I remember feeling so cold, though my temperature was very high. Now, as an adult, I continue to see the devastating consequence of malaria that inflicts on our African children: death, the pleading eyes of children in pain and in tears. We must wipe away these tears, stop this pain and death from robbing another generation of the bloom and the hope of future nation builders of Africa. Over the past 5 years, more than 75,000 Red Cross and Red Crescent volunteers across Africa were trained to give health service, health advice. They went village by village, house to house, neighborhood by neighborhood, to talk to parents about the importance of getting their children immunized against measles. And it has worked. The same canvassing of communities, volunteer network of the Red Cross, the power of humanity will be used to scale up the fight against malaria. The other day I met very enthusiastic Red Cross volunteers here, and they are similar to ours. They are dedicated, they are energetic. I thank them for their hard work and infectious enthusiasm to do good and save lives. There is a lot more in us that binds us together in our common humanity. We all want our families to be healthy. We all want to end malaria and end it once for all and truly for all. And together we can do it. Thank you.
Please welcome Robert W. Radke, President of the Episcopal Relief and Development, and Rick Warren, Senior Pastor at the Saddleback Church. Also, Reverend Stratton Gataha, Senior Pastor at the Living Church in Kigali, Rwanda.
Mrs. Bush, thank you to President and Mrs. Bush very much for hosting this wonderful summit on malaria. I want to tell you a story about a child that was told to us by Father Roger Banda, one of our partners in Zambia. We don't know the child's name, but for the purposes of the story, let's call him Albert. It was the end of the day, and Albert was walking towards his home, a single path, hidden in the tall grass, 8 kilometers off the tarmac road. Albert was looking forward to his family's evening meal with his mother and father and 3 little sisters. Albert is the firstborn. He doesn't know exactly how old he is, but he can read. After supper, he has chores and homework to do. As he approached his compound, he knew immediately that something terrible had happened. There was silence. Then he heard the weeping. His mother, his grandmother, and his sisters. One of his 3 younger sisters had died, and the body was lying on the only bed. The fever from early in the morning had developed quickly, and she had died just as quickly. Albert was sent to fetch the priest, who lived only a short distance away, a half an hour's walk away. As we've heard so many times today, malaria is the leading cause of death in children under 5 in sub-Saharan Africa. In Albert's village, babies are not even given a name until they're over a year old, for the chance of them being alive and needing a name is so remote. Imagine that priest that Albert went to fetch, having the knowledge, the tools, the training, the nets, and the volunteers to prevent the needless death of Albert's sister. And not just this little girl, but all those children, not yet named, not yet in school, being protected from malaria. Episcopal Relief and Development's partnership, Nets for Life, is distributing 1 million long-lasting insecticide-treated nets in 16 countries in sub-Saharan Africa over the next 3 years, together with training, monitoring, and evaluation. Nets for Life's ability to reach the last mile in Africa through its Anglican and Episcopal Church partners is reducing malaria morbidity and mortality for people who live at the end of the road. Nets for Life is pleased to partner with Malaria No More, and I'm delighted today to announce new funding from the Coca-Cola Africa Foundation, the ExxonMobil Foundation's Africa Health Initiative, and Standard Chartered Bank, totaling nearly $3.4 million for this important initiative. This support will enable over 28,000 nets, 2,800, 2,800 nets to be distributed, more than 800 new volunteers to be trained, and 850,000 vulnerable people to be protected from malaria. And not just malaria, but specifically malaria as it affects communities like Albert's and his family's, living beyond the end of the road. Thank you very much.
I, too, want to thank the President and Mrs. Bush for bringing us together in this summit on malaria. Nothing could be more urgent. I bring greetings from the Church of Rwanda. Malaria is rampant in our country due to extreme poverty, ignorance, and medical facilities that are inaccessible to many people who live in remote rural areas. When we were still young, they used to tell us that malaria is caused by eating sugarcane. I'm here today representing the purpose-driven network of churches in Rwanda around what we call our peace plan, a partnership between government, the private sector, and the church joining hands together as one in fighting diseases, ignorance, poverty, and malnutrition. Therefore, I'm very happy and thankful to the American government for the concern you have expressed and the public and private support you are providing. Vulnerable children and women in particular are perishing every day because of malaria. The church in Rwanda needs capacity building so that it can combat malaria for good. The church in Rwanda can intervene as an institution that is very near to the poor communities and even those in remote villages. The church is an organization with so many volunteers pursuing information campaigns to raise awareness against the killer malaria is quicker. The church has the heart and burden for the vulnerable and marginalized people. The church can accelerate the fight against malaria by training community health workers, raising awareness about the deadly nature of malaria and how to prevent it, sponsoring well-facilitated medical institutions, economic development projects, medical training center, poverty reduction projects, or facilities, and collaborating with government about the clearing of thickets which harbor mosquitoes, draining stagnant water, proper housing policy, and more. In conclusion, if only we can implement in our country such preventive measures, life expectancy will increase, mortality rates will reduce, and the rate of prosperity will also improve. Then malaria will be no more. The church in Rwanda is united, and with the government, we are more than ready to engage ourselves in these normal tasks of fighting disease, ignorance, and poverty. What is needed is capacity building so that the church can finish up with this giant malaria, and we are grateful to the Saddleback Church, Malaria No More, the U.S. government, and international institutions for their help. We look forward to showing how the church, with all its volunteers, can work in partnership with other institutions to sustain malaria prevention and treatment and to save lives of so many. God bless you, and God bless your country.
Thank you for caring. Thank you for coming here. No president and no first lady has ever done more for global health than President and Mrs. Bush. I want you to thank them. First in PEPFAR and now PMI. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. I want to thank Ray Chambers also for the vision of Malaria No More and for Admiral Zimmer for accepting this challenge. Would you thank them again for doing that? Pandemic diseases are one of what I call the five global Goliaths on our planet. And the largest, of course, of all the pandemic diseases is malaria, as you've heard over and over and over. This problem is solvable. But it's going to take a three-legged stool. Not a two-legged stool, not a one-legged stool. A two-legged stool will fall over. This last year I was speaking at the Davos Economic Forum, and I kept hearing about public-private partnership. And I wanted to say, yeah, you're there, but you're not quite there. There's a public sector role, there's a private sector role, and there's a faith sector role. There's a governmental role, and the government has things that only it can bring. It brings leadership, it brings resources, it brings visibility. There's a business and an NGO, a private sector role. And business and NGOs bring capital, and they bring expertise, and they bring management skills. But the third leg of the stool, is the local congregations, whether they're Muslim or Jewish or Hindu or Buddhist or Christian or whatever. You see, if you take the faith component off of the agenda, you've ruled out most of the world. There are 600,000 Buddhists in the world. There are 800,000 Hindus in the world. There are 1.3 billion Muslims in the world. And there are 2.3 billion Christians in the world. The largest organization in the world is the church. It was global 200 years before anybody started talking about globalization. I could take you to 10 million villages where the only thing in it is a church. So each organization has to bring to the table what it offers. The government has things it can only offer. Business and NGOs have things that only they can offer. But local congregations, regardless of what their faith is, bring four things to the table that we cannot overlook or we will never solve this problem. The first is universal distribution. As I said, I could take you to millions of villages where the only thing in it is a congregation. Outside of the capital in most countries, the only civil service structure is the church. And they are, I wish I had a map I could show you here of just one area of Rwanda where Pastor Stratton comes from. And in this area of Rwanda, which is about a 2 days walk, there are three hospitals. Two of them are church-based and one of them is government-based. There are 18 clinics in this area. 16 of them are church-based and two of them are faith-based. But there are over 800 churches in that same area. And if you mobilize those centers of distribution, it's far more than all the franchises ever put together. And they have that universal distribution. The second thing churches have is they have the greatest volunteer force. Hundreds of millions of people volunteer every week in their congregation, in their synagogue, in their temple, in their mosque. Hundreds of millions every single week. And we know from the tsunami in Asia, and we know from the Hurricane Katrina that they are faster and they're long-lasting. They last longer in the area more than anything else. They bring this together. We've been working on a plan for about 3 years now called the Global Peace Plan to mobilize local congregations to take on areas like poverty, disease, illiteracy, corruption, spiritual emptiness. The third thing that congregations have is local credibility. In that village, people trust their pastor, their priest, their imam, their rabbi, more than anybody else, because that person is there in the marrying, in the bearing, in the stages of life. You cannot stop malaria, or for that matter, any other health problem, without education. And when you're going to change minds, you have to have the credibility. And those people at the local level have far more credibility than you do, or I do, or anybody else. Because they sleep, as they say in Rwanda, under the same blankets every night with the villagers. So you have to have the credibility. The fourth thing that they offer is good record keeping. And if you're going to do trials, if you're going to do testings, if you're going to do monitoring, if you're going to do evaluation, then you have to have somebody keeping good records. Now, 3 years ago at Saddleback Church, we began testing a prototype of an idea of where could we get business leaders, government leaders, and church leaders to work together. And we called it the Peace Plan, P-E-A-C-E, of providing hope, equipping leaders, assisting the poor, caring for the sick, and educating the next generation. And over the last 3 years, I've had over 7,000, now almost 8,000 members of my church go overseas in 68 countries testing this prototype. This next year, we're going to release it to the 400,000 churches in 163 countries in our network just alone. That's just one network. Now, we began to look for a small country where we could get businesses and government and churches to actually work together. I knew it'd never happen in America, but I thought if we could find one small country, maybe we could do this together. And we were looking around, and then I received a letter from President Paul Kagame, the president of Rwanda. He said, I've read Purpose Driven Life. I'm a man of purpose, and we invite you to come and help us build the first model of the peace plan here in our country. So we have done this. And we've been working now for a couple of years, and I'm very happy to announce today that in partnership with Malaria No More and with well over 1,000 congregations, interfaith congregations in Rwanda, the government of Rwanda, the businesses of Rwanda, and the Peace Plan Network of Churches, that we're creating the first national model of an eradication of malaria in a nation using churches and congregations and businesses and the government working together. We intend to, over 1,000 church leaders have already committed to this, representing about 100,000 volunteers to train about 2.5 million villagers to eradicate, not just release, but eradicate malaria in Rwanda. We can do this. We can do this. When we hear about Rwanda or hear about Panama and the eliminating it within 2 years, down 80%, that's what we need to do today. God bless you.
Thank you, Reverend Kataha and Pastor Rick. Thank you all to our panelists from whom we've learned a lot, and we can help in the fight against malaria. I thank you all. And for the sake of time, we will be taking a very, very short stretching break, and we'll resume momentarily. Thank you.